You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In this study summary, Taha Taha of the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health discusses the results of a study of the effects of maternal, highly active antiretroviral therapy on postnatal HIV-1 transmission after stopping of extended infant antiretroviral prophylaxis. After the discussion, there will be a series of questions and answers.
Certainly, the transmission of how to prevent HIV transmission through breast milk is a very critical challenge for all of us working in several settings where breastfeeding is important. So it is important for the survival of the infant. And just the alternatives like formula feeding and not breastfeeding is not the best option available to these women. So last year we completed a clinical trial where we showed that providing prophylaxis to the infant with nevirapine or nevirapine plus zidovudine can reduce transmission. So giving only the infant an extended prophylaxis up to 14 weeks can reduce transmission. And it is very effective during the time when the transmission, when the prophylaxis is given, that is up to 14 weeks. During the conduct of this trial, antiretrovirals became available in Malawi, where we work in Southeast Africa. So we referred women who were eligible for treatment. It is important to emphasize the point here that these are eligible women, women with CD4 less than 250. So we referred them to this service that became available. So we followed these infants and these mothers after the infant has completed 14 weeks of prophylaxis. When the mother receives HART, so what will be the rate of transmission? What we have found is that the rate of transmission for women who were eligible and had the opportunity to receive antiretrovirals, the transmission was substantially reduced. The association with the reduction of transmission was about 82% when the mother, the eligible woman, has received HART, compared to a woman who was eligible but did not receive HART. The other group of women, these are women with high CD4, meaning that they are not eligible for treatment. In the government program and the current recommendations, women with high CD4 not necessarily receive treatment. So the transmission among these, the infants of these women, was very comparable to the transmission among the infants of women who received HART. So we concluded that providing HART for eligible women, for women who should be on treatment, does reduce transmission to the infant, and combining the infant prophylaxis and the maternal HART, we could say that in settings like in Malawi, where women come very late for delivery and they do not come during pregnancy or prior to pregnancy, they are not on HART. So for these women, we could start the infant on extended prophylaxis up to 14 weeks, for example, and then identify those women who should receive HART based on their CD4 count and start them also on HART postpartum. We believe it is a practical regimen or strategy.
You actually found that compared to the eligible women who were receiving HART, the women with higher CD4 counts, the ineligible women, actually had comparably less risk of transmission than the treated women. And I guess my question is just why? Would that simply be related to perhaps lower viral loads in the women with the higher CD4 counts, or were there other factors that you examined to account for that?
Your interpretation is correct. To the best we know, these women certainly have lower viral load and high CD4. So they are not immunocompromised as much as the women who have low CD4. So viral load has been consistently shown in all the studies we know. The higher the viral load, the more likely that the woman will transmit. So these women are, as far as their health and their immune status, are much better than women who have low CD4 and eligible for treatment.
Is that a correlation that you specifically analyzed in your study, or is it something we can more or less just infer from
No, we do collect CD4 data because, of course, it is one of the parameters on which we base treatment. We also have baseline viral load from this study we have tested. We have subsequent samples also to test viral load. Unfortunately, for cost constraints, we could only do baseline now. But data from this study showed that women who is high viral load had higher transmission.
Just to note that it's been established in multiple studies that the risk of transmission from mother to child during pregnancy as well as postnatally is quite directly related to her health status.
Is it possible that if one adequately treats the mother that one does not have to use prophylaxis with the infant and that prevention can take place?
Yes, and it's actually a very important question. Because giving too much, be that to the infant or the mother, there are side effects. So if the mother is receiving, say, hard, it is some studies have shown that actually through breast milk, the levels of these drugs will be high in the infant. So it will be absorbed in the infant, and it can be shown in the infant plasma to be high, and much more probably than what the level of toxicity would be normally. So in our own setting, our thinking, and there are no clear guidelines to this point, in our thinking is that the infant starts with prophylaxis at time of birth, and then as soon as you can get the woman ready, if she is eligible for treatment, start her on treatment. And our own thinking is that the infant should be stopped, should not receive prophylaxis if the woman is on treatment. It is likely that the infant receiving prophylaxis and the mother also receiving treatment, there could be increased levels in the infant that might not be very safe. This is a thinking we believe probably just treating the mother will be enough. And at that time, the infant prophylaxis should probably be stopped. If the woman was eligible and was on treatment, it is unlikely that the infant prophylaxis would be necessary. I mean, at least the rates of transmission would be very comparable. However, in settings like in Malawi, we have very few women who have been on treatment during pregnancy or even before pregnancy. So the immediate the contact with health services usually for most women starts at the labor room or the labor ward or just immediate postpartum period. So at that time, we believe we can do the workup for the mother, and if she is eligible, then she should start heart as quickly as possible.
According to your result, on the opposite for ineligible women, would you advise treatment for the children once these 14 weeks are gone?
You mean prophylaxis to the infant?
Yes.
We think the prophylaxis for the infant should continue.
Even with your results with the reduction of the risk, which was quite the same as treated women?
Yes, because what will happen is that transmission continues. So after the infant prophylaxis is stopped in our own study at 14 weeks, after that, transmission continued. So to protect this prolonged breastfeeding period, we believe the infant should receive prophylaxis. A very difficult discussion, and WHO and several colleagues who are working in this field are trying to come up with guidelines that could be consistent. For how long should the infant be on prophylaxis? A practical answer, a very simple one, would be give the prophylaxis as long as the infant is being breastfed. But we do not know the safety of this extended prophylaxis throughout breastfeeding. So these are certainly points that are being discussed, and hopefully before the end of this year, there will be a consensus. And another study, actually probably more than one study, are right now ongoing for maternal heart, high CD4. So the results of that clinical trial probably will also provide evidence.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.